Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. Today is a spotlight on an upcoming book that I'm really excited about reading. We have the creator of the book coming on to join us. He's been on the show before, and we also have the editor and designer of the book. So I'd like to welcome back Kyle Higgins to the show. And for the first time, Michael Basudel is joining us. So gentlemen, welcome. Great to have you.
Oh, great thanks so much. Great to be here.
Yeah. So like I said, Kyle's been on quite a few times. So not that he's by any means, an old hand, but Michael, whenever we have someone on for the first time, we always kind of like to give them a chance to introduce themselves and talk a little bit about their background with comics. So just give everybody a real quick intro into what you do, how you got into the world of comics, and then we'll talk about Radiant Black.
Oh boy, I wasn't prepared for this. Okay, I think in terms of like as a fan of comics, at some point, probably 15 years ago or so, I was at a anime convention and I picked up the first Ultimate X-Men trade, and that was it. My life was ruined forever. Professionally, I met Kyle through a podcast I do called Ranger Danger. It's a Power Rangers podcast. Kyle came on to talk about his run of Power Rangers. The very long story short version of that is we became friends through that, and eventually Kyle asked me to edit Radiant Black. That's the very short version.
No, that's perfect. That's a great lead into the book that we're here to discuss. So, Kyle, we'll shift over to you. Why don't you give our listeners an idea of what Radiant Black is about?
Well, before I do that, I guess I should probably point out here that that's why Michael gets paid the big bucks here to edit Radiant Black, because holy cow, that was the most succinct version of that origin. I mean, you left out the talking for a year before realizing that Matt was a writer and what, you know, all of the wizardry you do. You left out the Shattered Grid live action promo that you helped work on. You worked on with me. Michael pulled all of the clips that we used in the opening of that live action promo. You left out the Shattered Grid live table read at Power Morphicon, where I blew out my ACL and two Power Rangers caught me. You were there for that. You were working the board. I got to say, Michael, cue the music. So you left out the fact that
it's been a big 5 years, Kyle, but
he surprised us, Matt and myself, at Power Morphicon, as I was leaving the title. He surprised us with this gift he had been working on in secret for many, many months. He took the first 12 episodes of the Power Rangers podcast that we all did together, where we went through each issue of the book,
right,
one per episode. And each, by the way, each recording is probably at least an hour long. And he took all 1,200 hours of those, had them transcribed, and then I assume you didn't transcribe them yourself, right?
Oh, I did like an automated web thing, and then I cleaned them up. Yeah,
he cleaned them up and then turned that into a several hundred page book, and had a handful of copies made with full book binding and an embossed cover of a lightning bolt. And it's a collection of our first 12 issues. Together, 12 recordings together.
A labor like, of love, no doubt.
So the idea of like, hey, Michael, why don't you edit Radiant Black is not an out of left field idea, okay? And all of the stuff that you've probably seen in your social media feeds, first of all, I'm sorry for bombarding you for weeks now, but all of those social media assets and graphics, the website, Michael built all of that. So he's not only editing the book, but he's designing really the Radiant Black brand. And so, yeah, it goes way beyond, just editing the series. So, but as far as what the series actually is, it's very much kind of a millennial reinvention of the kind of Spider-Man archetype, right? Like it's kind of Spider-Man crossed with Power Rangers in a lot of ways. I describe it as friendly neighborhood problems with interstellar scope. So it's about a 30-year-old aspiring writer named Nathan Burnett, who is living in Los Angeles. And when we meet him in issue one, it's on the most existentially terrifying splash page I've ever written. A splash page of his bank account balance, which is $46.98 in a checking account and negative $38,000 in credit card debt. And the word balloon coming off his cell phone where you see the bank account balance says, "I'm sorry, Mr. Burnett, but unfortunately your loan application has been denied." So he's only recently 30 and shit just hasn't really worked out. So by page five, he's moving back in with his parents in his hometown in Illinois. And that's when things really kick off. I don't want to spoil how he becomes a superhero. The idea of like a superhero, a new superhero in a world that is that we currently live in, which is very much a kind of postmodern superhero world, is part of the fun of the book as well. So,
yeah. And you've I've seen you mention several times on social media about how it's, a personal project for you, probably the book that you were kind of,
they're all personal, like, right.
Is this the most personal? Is that fair to say?
I don't know. In some ways, yeah. But like Hadrian's Wall for me was about, I was writing it about a breakup as I was going through like the most life-shattering breakup I've ever experienced, you know? So that's really personal, right? But in this book, yeah, he's a 30-year-old, white guy writer who really wants to be a crime novelist. And he moves back in with he falls in debt and moves back in with his parents in my hometown. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot. The book is not about me, but there's a lot of me in the book. So it's personal in some of the specificity, Hadrian's Wall is epically, Hadrian's Wall is very hard for me to revisit. Even when I was adapting it as a screenplay, it was always like, oh man, I got to go there again, emotionally. So, but on Radiant Black, it was after that breakup that I went to Europe for 5 weeks by myself. And then on the way back to LA, I stopped in Illinois and I ended up staying for several months with my parents. And I didn't have to, but I loved it. It was so great, the whole time I was back there, I was thinking about like how kind of wild this was. And, the fiction writing brain side of my brain was going this is absolutely, there's a story here. There's something here, and I know a lot of people, I have a lot of friends that are a number of friends that have left LA and have moved back home. And so I don't know, there's something in the water as I was building this, and, I've got debt as well. And so it's like, well, if we're going to build out an original superhero series, and this hopefully could really be a foundational kind of book and world for me, considering that I'd done Power Rangers and then done Ultraman am doing Ultraman. And now this, it's like, oh man, when the opportunity came to develop an original creator-owned superhero, it was like, okay, I want to take as big a swing as I possibly can. And not that I would ever, there's no guarantees, but thinking to yourself like, okay, in a perfect world, if this did last a long time, like, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And just thinking about Todd doing so many issues of Spawn and Eric's right on his tail with Savage Dragon, he'll hit 300 and not too long now as well. And just going if that is the case, I think that building a foundation that can grow as I grow is the best way for if I were still writing this 10 years from now, it's like the book can kind of do and become whatever it wants to be based on what I do and become in some ways, at least from an interest standpoint. So that's really where some of the making it really diving into kind of personal life stuff, there, that's where that impetus comes from on this one in particular.
Yeah. And you know, you said yourself, here we have the main character of Nathan. He's a creative too, you know, just like yourself, trying to become a crime novelist. So you identify with him where he's struggling to create. You identify him with, you know, which I imagine a lot of creators have that constant fear of failure. Is it on multiple levels that you're kind of drawing from your own experiences to make him as real as possible?
I don't know. Michael knows me really well, and Michael's there for a lot of the neurosis. Michael, what? Be careful what you say here, because I may end up like crawling into a hermit hole and not talking to you for 3 days. And there's too many fires that we're dealing with. Good fires, by the way, not bad fires.
I can't afford to lose you for 3 days while you go on an emotional bender. That's interesting. There's certainly, I will say that, like, working on this book with you, there's parts of that character that don't feel like the neuroses and concerns that you have. Sure. Like, there's definitely parts of him that aren't you. There are parts of him that are you, because I think, I don't remember who it was who said this, like, every character you write is part you. You know what I mean? Like, you can't write a character that isn't at least part you, because you're the person who is writing them.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think there's certainly parts of his concerns that mirror what I know you are personally concerned about. And I think then there's some other stuff that maybe comes from, like, I don't know, we've never really talked about it, but maybe comes from other people you know, or other people in other fields, and stuff you've heard other people talk about. And it all comes together to make someone who's a little bit like you, but is not exactly like you.
Yeah, I think that is a very well articulated, succinct editorial statement. I applaud.
Thank you. That is my job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the supporting cast as well. There's a best friend in the book who never really left their hometown, and they were like good friends up through high school, but like Nathan moved to Los Angeles after college. And so it's like one of those friends that, like, you guys kind of don't, if you guys met now, you probably wouldn't be friends, but because you met when you did, it's like, there's always going to be that connection there, even though now they've kind of, you know, as far as Nathan's concerned, like, the Marshall is kind of like a low doses best friend, you know. It's like, yeah, I love him, like, I appreciate him, but also, like, I can only do so much Marshall, you know, in a given time. But that character is, there's a lot of me in that character as well. So it's like, I've been kind of thinking about it as, like, in certain ways, like, Nathan is very much one side of me and Marshall is very much another side of me, you know? And that's been kind of fun. That's been really fun to play with. And what's going to be even more fun to play with now that I've said that is when I completely upend it and just completely fuck both characters up. And then you go, well, now who's he writing? You know?
Right.
No, not who's he writing, but whoa, which side is which of Kyle, you know?
At war with yourself, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's been fun.
I'm glad you brought up supporting characters, because I did want to ask about that. We meet Nathan's parents in the first issue. We meet his best friend, Marshall, like you mentioned. So many of the best superhero comics have a strong supporting cast. Certainly Spider-Man, that you mentioned, is kind of an inspiration. Mm-hmm. So should we expect a supporting cast to grow over time and really play an important part at certain times in the narrative?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a single character book predominantly. From a lead, like, it's not, you know, I'm not writing, like, it's not a team book, and it's not like a book where,
like, an ensemble or something.
Yeah. An ensemble. There you go. But the supporting characters will all kind of get their due. And his parents, Marshall, there are some others coming up that, I don't want to spoil, but, there's even some characters that are maybe not of this earth that, or even this kind of plane of existence that could come into play and be prominent and characters that you either fall in love with or despise. I guess we'll find out.
Well, cool. I want to shift gears here, though. And
sure.
So Michael, this is the first time that we've had a chance to talk to a designer on a book. So I wanted to ask you, you're obviously when it comes to design, you want to make sure you're kind of evoking that same emotional tone that that Kyle's trying to capture with the narrative. What's the challenge there when you want to make sure, well, it's got to look cool, you know, especially, you know, in social media and getting the marketing out there and everything. Talk to us a little bit about that and go through the process for us.
Sure. I think, you know, it's always a conversation. Like at the end of the day, I am an editor and a designer on this book, but I think that this book is Kyle and Marcelo's story, right? It's the book that they want to do. And everything I am doing should be in service of that in both of my positions. So it started with Kyle and I really early on were talking about some ideas for design that was sort of like 80s throwbacky sort of retro stuff. And I don't think I said to Kyle that I hated it, but I was definitely thinking that I hated it. And at one point I was just lying in bed and I was just like, oh, I finally understand what it is about this approach that isn't working for me. So I wrote Kyle this email that was like, hey, I think the problem is this retro throwback thing doesn't work because there's no nostalgia in this book. Mm. Like this book it's about modern problems. It's about people living in our world today. It's not an update of an existing franchise. There's no inbuilt audience like there is for Power Rangers or Ultraman or many other vast superheroes. This is a brand new thing. And so it should look like 2020 or 2021 now, I guess. And so, you know, it started with Kyle and I. We had a long conversation about stuff we liked, influences. You know, there were some ideas in that first email, I think, like people would probably not be surprised if I listed some of the stuff, like all of Tom Muller's work, especially his work on X-Men lately, a whole bunch of like, you know, modern video games and Japanese design studios and stuff that just felt really up to date and particular. And then, you know, the logo for Radiant Black existed before I came on the book. That was by a friend of Kyle's, Rich Bloom. And so it's about designing something that fits that logo, fits the book, fits what we're thinking about the tone is for the book. And also, I mean, practically something that is relatively straightforward to roll out because, you know, we have to do new sorts of pages every couple of issues and we have to be constantly making changes and tweaks. And so straightforward is the winner generally on this.
But there's been like, we've had long back and forths for many months over certain like elements that it's really interesting. Like looking at the book at the printer last night and today and going through each page, I'm so proud of how it turned out. And I truly love how it looks. But like, for example, there's a double page spread in it of our title graphic. And that version of the graphic is a decision we only made fairly recently. And that decision came out of the fact that we had styled the title graphic differently for the animated trailer that we all made. And we liked how it looked there. And then it was like, oh, well, maybe. And so like, there's been this evolution of even just the way we integrate and use the logo. You know, if you look at the logo on Michael Cho's cover, his A cover, that was the very first cover we had done on Radiant Black at all. So that cover also informed some of our, you know, design kind of inspiration or choices to a certain extent, where it's like, okay, like we have this kind of conceptual idea of modernity and keeping it current. But then Michael went and did that amazing cover that is like super hip. And it's like, okay, great. Like that, now we're seeing it proofed out on the cover and how we dress it, et cetera. But look at the logo on the Michael Cho cover and look at the logo on probably any of the store retailer exclusive covers on issue one. And they're styled differently because there was an evolution as behind the scenes, that's the cool thing about like having such a tight little team. It's Michael, it's me, it's Marcelo, and it's Becca, and that's it. That's it. We'll probably bring a colorist on at some point, just because it's so labor intensive for Marcelo to be doing everything. But at the same time, that's still a very small team. And so like we have a group, Michael, Marcelo and I have a GChat thread. And so we're constantly messaging back and forth and sharing ideas and so it's to see the evolution of the design process has been really, really neat.
Now, you know, with your background in film and, you know, obviously visual is a big part of what you do in terms of storytelling, whether you're doing comics or, you know, something live action. Here you have, and this is what a lot of creators tell me when they do something creator owned and they don't realize just how many decisions and how much more is on their plate. You really feel like having that in your back pocket has helped you out in terms of being able to talk design and, you know, work on visuals and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, Michael can tell you, like, I don't always know what I want, and I can absolutely get really, really granular and kind of like obsessive about like really small details, you know?
That's true.
But I do think by and large, I have pretty good taste. Like I can see something, especially when I'm on set, like as a filmmaker, like you're making a lot of decisions really, really quickly. And everyone's coming to you kind of all at once. And sometimes I don't know what I want, but I know what I like when I see it. Mm-hmm. Or I know, oh, maybe, or that'll give me an idea. So there's that component, but that I do think is beneficial on a creator-owned book. That said, this is the first time on a creator-owned book that I've had an editor to the extent that Michael is working on the book. We've tried editors in the past, like Andy Schmidt edited the first volume of Cowl. But we all just kind of felt like, well, it's probably, you know, I think Andy even said, he's like, honestly, you don't really need me, you know? Mm-hmm. Cause I ended up just doing everything myself you have to will a book into existence,
right?
Especially on the creator owned side. You have to will it into existence. Matt Groom and I talk about this all the time. And so sometimes that means like, yeah, it's fine. I'll do the paste up myself. I'll do this. I'll interface with Rich for the logo. I'll hire Rich to do some additional design that I can't do or don't know how to do. Like I'll coordinate Rod, etc. And so then once you get into Hadrian, when we're doing Hadrian's Wall, Matt Idelson came on, but the same thing happened. I just ended up doing it all, you know? And the great thing about Michael is that he's crazier than me. So he will do whatever he has to do or whatever needs to be done and just goes above and beyond the extra mile to the extent where like, I realize like, oh, this is great. I don't have to do this. It's not that I don't have to do it. It's like, oh, I don't have to worry about this. Right. Like Michael can do it even better than I could by far. And he's on top of it. And it's like, oh, I get to just focus on making the book. That's a really nice, you know, safety net to have.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
You're right. I think what Kyle has that is really beneficial as a client, in the sense that Kyle is like a design client for me, is, you know, Kyle doesn't necessarily know what he wants, but Kyle knows if it's not what he wants. And he has ideas about the direction that would be better for what he's going for. And that means that, like, you know, you get clients who are like, I don't want that. I want this. And then I have to go, well, actually, this won't work for all of these reasons. Kyle just says, not that. Can we try something a bit more like this? And I can go, yes, here's some ideas in that direction that I think work with my expertise. It's a really nice relationship, actually.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, the fact that we don't hate each other is pretty. It's
issue one's not out yet, Kyle. Give it time.
Well, but even just like if you look at what we've built so far, and the trailer is a really good example as well. Like, there's no way we would be able. There's no way this book does as well as it is looking like it's going to do if we weren't a coordinated front. You know, we've got a really good team here. So I don't know, man, you read the book. What do you think of it?
I was blown away. So the thing,
thank you.
The thing that really got me, Kyle, is, you know, you've talked about, you know, like, and we've talked a little bit about how personal it is. And I think the worry that a casual fan might have is, okay, it's a superhero story, but Kyle's talking about, you know, making it, him wanting to make people feel what he felt when he was watching Power Rangers or whatever. But don't lose sight of the fact that this is a superhero book, and there's action and there's fun and there's great fights and there's cool concepts and great art. So that's got to be a challenge to make sure you're balancing those things as well, right? Do you think you're better now, you know, better suited having, you know, years under your belt, having written comics to make sure you're striking that balance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I also have a better kind of feel and understanding for the lay of the land on an ongoing series and kind of when you really should be looking to hit people with a surprise or how to, you know, to really think in the long term. And, you know, Robert has that story about Invincible where like the big Omni-Man twist of Invincible's father and who he actually is. He was originally going to do that twist in like issue 25, but the book was not selling and was really on life support. And he happened to tell, I guess he told Jim Valentino, who was the editor in chief at the time. And Valentino was like, no, do that tomorrow. Like you should have done that two issues ago. And he did it and the book and things really started to kind of pick up. So like, I'm aware of that. I'm also aware on a creator owned, you know, like I didn't write the slogan, a superhero series for a new generation. Okay. Like, I'm not sure where that came from, but it's definitely like a little bit of a heavier bag that I'm like, well, I'm going to carry this thing up the hill and let's see what we can do about that, you know? And so that means like taking really big swings and really unexpected swings, even within the first arc. So that to me is like, that's the big thing that I'm trying to keep in mind is like, I think we've got something really cool here and people seem to really be responding to, certainly aesthetically. And it's like, I don't want to lose sight of the like fact that like, this is a book that should surprise you and it should keep you wanting to come back, you know, not just because of the characters for sure, but also, but more importantly, because of the threats and the situations you're putting the characters in. And so that to me is really important. So like what we're doing on issue 3, for example, is wildly ambitious in a narrative sense. And then what 4 and 5 are and 6 in the first arc, boy. Like, oh boy. Yeah.
Well, that's the important part, right? To keep challenging yourself, you know, not to keep coming back to Spider-Man, which you mentioned as an inspiration, but there's a reason those like first 100 issues, you know, it wasn't just the action and being introduced to these new characters. It was the angst and it was the emotion. And I'm not talking about the emotion that Peter was feeling, you know, Peter Parker was feeling as he was going through the things. I'm talking about the emotion for the readers. Right. And so that's really what you're trying to get at, that connection with your readers.
Right. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Michael, so often when I do these interviews, I don't get to speak to the editor and I'm talking to the creatives about the collaboration, but you're a little bit above all that. So you're kind of seeing it from a different perspective. How do you feel the collaboration is between Kyle and Marcelo and Becca? Does it seem like they're really gelling together? Like you guys have kind of got lightning in a bottle?
Yeah, incredibly. I mean, Kyle, I hope this doesn't sound like me throwing you under the bus because I really don't mean it that way. Mm-hmm. Like issue 3, Kyle and Marcelo are basically already working like Marvel style. Kyle is writing outlines. There's some pages that are panels, but there's also some pages where Kyle's like, hey, Marcelo, just this is what needs to happen. I trust you to work this out. You know, and then Marcelo will send through thumbnails and sometimes we will have notes and sometimes we won't. But,
but other times like there's really dialogue. There are pages that are just dialogue and he, you know, so it really spans the gamut of like whatever. Yeah. To get the point across.
Yeah. And I think like Becca really just like slotted herself right in terms of like her first pass at what the book should look like is basically what it looks like now in terms of lettering styles. Kyle had an idea. There's a different sort of balloon. And Kyle was like, we have this idea. And one of the options on the first three or four options was like, yes, that's exactly the one. There really hasn't been any sort of teething difficulties or...
Tell him the story about, it's not really a story, but talk to him about when you first saw the pass that of Becca's letters and what she did with those location caption boxes.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're going to make me cry on a podcast. That's fine. this is, you know, like we had before Becca came on, I don't remember the exact timeline, but there were already, Kyle and Marcelo had done some preview pages together. And then I was sort of already working on design just as Becca was starting to come in as the letterer. Mm-hmm. So we had like an inside front cover and some styles and some stuff like that. And so, you know, the inside front cover has got these little sort of doohickey bits off to the side that don't really do anything. They're just there to fill some space. And Becca, in her first pass at the book, her first doing anything, her lettering captions, like grabbed a bit of chunks of those and just threw them into the lettering captions so that, you know, the lettering captions feel like a part of the same book as the inside front cover. Mm-hmm. And there's a real, like, you don't, there's lots of letterers who wouldn't do that, right? Who would just do something of their own style. And that would be fine. That would be entirely not a problem. But to have someone come on board the team and instantly go like, okay, I see what's going on here. Let's make sure that everything works together was really properly lovely.
Yeah. And I think she's done such a great job on the, you know, the first couple issues I got to read. And it's such a sort of a thankless job, as I kind of compare it to being an NFL referee or an umpire. If you're noticing them because they're doing a bad job inserting themselves into the game, that's not a good thing. When you don't notice them, that's when they're doing the best job. But then, yeah, oftentimes they don't get the credit. You know, the way, the placement of the bubbles, how far they are apart, the sentence breaks. I mean, all that has to do with getting the pace of how somebody reads it, which in turn affects the pace of the story. And so you can never take a great letter for granted.
Yeah. And, you know, Becca, I came across Becca actually through her, I don't know if you'd be considered her mentor or not, but Clayton Cowles.
Okay.
Who, yep. I love Clayton. I've worked with Clayton on a number of books, on Dead Hand, on Nightwing, The New Order, on Winter Soldier. He's on another book that I'm doing right now. And so when Radiant Black came around, I reached out to Clayton first to do it. And he's like, hey, you know, I'm kind of cutting back on my, you know, creator own stuff. He's like, but would you be interested in this newer letterer that I've been kind of like showing the ropes to, Becca Carey? And he sent me a bunch of her stuff. And it was like, it was really cool. And he's like, as you can see, like, she's pretty inventive, was how he described it. And I was like, man, that is the, after now doing two issues with Becca, that is the perfect way to describe her and her style. Like, she innovates and she's pushing the envelope on certain things, as Michael's talking about from a design standpoint, bringing design to her lettering. She's a designer as well. And she actually did our B cover, which we haven't revealed yet for issue 3. And it is the thing that makes me smile the most in the last few months, especially when you look at it immediately after looking at the A cover.
Man, it really sounds like you guys are having so much fun working on this. And that always comes through, you know, from a reader standpoint, we can tell when you're having a lot of fun. Is this the most fun you've had doing a book, Kyle? Not to put you on the spot.
It's yes. I'll tell you the most fun moment I've had doing a book, definitely a creator owned book, is when we got our numbers on issue 1.
I bet.
Because we're all very, very excited. That's all.
It was a very nice email to get.
It was a nice email. Yeah.
Now, is there anything in the, say, the first volume, you know, the number of issues that'll go in the first trade? Could you pick out one or two things that you're most excited to experience the reader reaction for? Are there any spoilers? You don't have to tell us what they are, but do you guys know, like, are there big moments that you can't wait to see people lose their minds?
I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The thing is though, like, basically here's the here's the dragon I'm chasing. Okay. Perpetually is when I was doing Power Rangers, we did this panel that was a Rune Sings idea, where we surprise hand out 1500 copies of the first issue of Shattered Grid, the big event that I wrote, to the entire audience, to 1,000 people or 1500 people, how many it was a massive like hall at WonderCon, and we gave them 15 minutes to read it, 10 to 15 minutes to read it, like in the room. Mm-hmm. And so I sat there on stage and I'm the one who surprise revealed, we're going to let you all read this. And then people came out of the aisles and people in the audience just lost their mind. And then I watched 1,000 people read a thing I wrote, where on a page turn bait and switch reveal, the most popular Power Ranger of all time, Tommy, is murdered in front of your eyes. I watched someone start to cry. I'm not making this up. Like, there was someone that started to cry. Someone yelled out. Someone got up and left, and I turned to Ryan and I went, oh no, like what? This, I was terrified that this was about to go off the rails. Like, what have I done? And then all I could think to myself is, man, I'm really glad that we didn't go with the first version of the art, because it was real graphic and it was, it wasn't approved. We pulled it back. But the first version, there's like a blade coming out of his chest and everything. And it's just like, all I could think about in that moment is like, we would have been run out of here if we had done that. So, but that experience, that high of like something I wrote, like all of these people, like it terrifies me, but it also is, I was really, really proud of that issue. So it really, really excited me to like, actually, you know, I had killed myself on that issue and I knew it worked. So to watch other people experience it live was really, really special. And so that is what I'm kind of constantly chasing now, I think. And with Radiant Black, there are some moments in the first arc that I would say, the idea of this, of what issue three is, I'm really, really excited by. And then there's some stuff in four and five, I guess.
I think I don't know how to talk about this without spoiling anything, so I'm going to be very, very careful. But there's some stuff that I'm really excited for people to get to understand about, like, how we're making the book. Kyle, I think, will understand maybe what I'm talking about, like, you know, issue six, for example, is a bit weird, and we're doing some sort of different things with it. That's all I'm going to say at this point. That's still a long way away, but like, I that stuff is exciting to me, even outside the story stuff, and I'm excited for people to get to see what we've got going on there.
Well, as a creator, Kyle, I mean, you want to tell the story you want to tell, you want to connect with your readers, you want to evoke that emotion, but is it really important for you to continue to keep challenging yourself and try new things and get better? Do you think that helps you evolve and be able to tell new stories and innovate?
Yeah, but it's really hard. It's hard. I'm a very, very self-analytical person, but at the same time, it's hard to recognize deficiencies in your craft, for example, without turning that into like self-hatred. Mm. And so I don't really dwell on that too often. Like, how do I push myself? Like, I'm not thinking about that too much, because thinking about like, well, how do I push myself, then makes me think about like, well, am I bad at that? If I'm bad at that, why? And then I start drinking. It's not quite that direct, but no, it's the bigger thing for me that I've found and has been really, really rewarding is I've been doing a lot of co-writing lately. On, you know, like I'm co-writing Ultraman with Matt, but I'm also co-writing a number of other things that aren't announced yet. I'm working with Lance Briggs on The Trap, the OGN that we did the Kickstarter for at the end of last year. And so that experience of like working with a variety of other writers and talking story and breaking things together. I'm editing some other creators' books as well. That's been a really nice way to like figure out what I actually believe from a like kind of tenets of storytelling or comics writing. Because you're kind of forced to articulate things that otherwise you normally just kind of feel, you know? Yeah. But it's also a way that I've been able to kind of broaden my horizons from the standpoint of like, sometimes I have to stop myself. And I say this to Lance all the time. I go like, I have to stop myself because I would not do that. That's not how I would do it. And I know how I would do it. But at the same time, just because I would do it this way doesn't mean that your way is wrong.
Right.
Unless there is something specific in it that I'm bumping on. And then I have to figure out what is that? How do I articulate it through the lens of, as I was saying, like kind of like the tenets of what I believe storytelling to be, but then also be able to sit back and go like, oh, well, maybe I'm not as firm on that as I thought I was, you know? So it's being inspired and challenged creatively without, you know, forcing myself to like self-evaluate, I guess. Not to say that I don't self-evaluate. I don't know. It's, you're asking me to talk about stuff that,
yeah, I know you're
stuff
you're
that's
walking,
hard.
Yeah. You're walking that tightrope to make sure you, like you said, you don't kind of fall off one side or the other and you're overthinking it and it doesn't, you know, the creative process can't just happen.
Yeah. Like I'll say like, I know the types of genres that I like writing in. And I know, but I also know kind of what my taste is now. And my taste now is different from what my taste was even 5 years ago. You know, I actually attribute a lot of what I enjoy trying to do as a writer now, I very much attribute to Matt and Michael here. And just getting to know them so well and us talking kind of every single day. And Matt's a brilliant writer and has brilliant story thoughts and perspective that different perspectives than I have. And being able to actually to see him grow as a writer and what he believes storytelling wise, and then to talk over that and find a middle ground sometimes, or straight up do it, or what I think is, you know, or it's like, oh, I actually really, really want to do it this way. And here's the reasons. Like, that's actually been really beneficial, like in particular, like to be really pointed, like Matt is like the most, I don't know, I would call his writing, I had a term for it, Michael. It was like, someone called it in a review one time, someone called his writing very romantic. And I think that feels right. They're totally right. Like hard on his sleeve, like it's very romantic, but also very optimistic. And when I was doing Rangers, it was the first time I wasn't writing darker, kind of grittier street level superheroes. You know, I was like, I was bringing a little noir into it or some Cold War references. Cause I had to, but, it was very cinematic, but also, it was lighter except for when, Finster was turning, putty people into bombs, Michael. but then as we got into Shattered Grid and Daniele came on and that changed the tone, visually from what Henry Presetia was doing, then I was able to kind of adjust stylistically as well. And yeah, just like talking to these guys, you know, the fact that my favorite page in my entire run is a double page spread that's silent as lightning or as bursts of light rain down from the sky of all the Power Rangers teleporting in is like, I don't know that 5 years ago I would have wanted to turn that into that moment into a meal.
Right.
You know? So.
Yeah. And just a little plug for everybody. We did have Matt on the show to talk about his self-made title.
Oh, good.
Which Kyle edited. So go back, look for that interview, everybody. Highly recommend that title. It's great. I did want to, you mentioned, you know, collaboration earlier, and Michael had mentioned how some of the stuff is that you're doing in the in Reading Black is in the Marvel method for Marcello. So do you feel like it's that same sort of relationship where you're pulling things from Marcello and his aesthetic, just like you've done with Matt and Michael?
Yeah, probably. I'm basically just a I'm just a parasite. I just take from everybody. That's all I do. I would say I pull from his style. I know kind of what I have a better sense now, having done almost 3 issues together, but also like countless designs and covers and character sketches and what's your designs. I feel like I have a better understanding of like what he does well and what he really likes to do. Mm-hmm. And just like, he really loves Sentai and Tokusatsu and superheroes. So just keeping that in mind, keeping some of the other influences that we have for the book in mind, definitely has shaped, I guess, how I write it. Yeah. There's a sequence in issue 4 that I don't even think I've told Michael about yet, but it's like super, for lack of a better term, it's like, it's incredibly spiritual, but as a superhero, and it's like, it's kind of like a different plane of existence, kind of spiritual, you know? But not religious, not a God thing. It's specific to the mythology of the Radiant. Yeah. And it's just like, that's a thing that I could totally see in an anime or see in a sequence in Kamen Rider and, or Sentai, Super Sentai. And, so like being able to draw that influence and kind of bring that to this feels cool, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of the best creators that work in kind of that sort of vein, they do 2 things really well, at least in my experience. They do facial expressions really well, so you know what the character is feeling, and they do action really well. And Marcello's hitting it out of the park. I mean, that fight scene in issue 2 is just, I was like, yeah, let me go back and just look at, I've read it, now let me go back and just look at the art. I mean, it was really great.
Yeah, he did a pretty amazing job. And the craziest part is he's only getting better and better.
Awesome. Michael, we've mentioned Spider-Man as an influence a couple times here. And again, you being the editor and kind of being above it all and seeing a little more of the overview, what do you see as some of the influences? Like if somebody's maybe on the fence, I'm not sure, I want to read it, this is kind of what I like, this is, you know, who would you be recommending this book to other than, you know, everybody? That it's easy to say that, it's going to be so great. But yeah. if you like this, if you like Invincible, if you like, you know, this kind of thing, you're really going to dig it. What are your thoughts?
It's an interesting question. Yeah, I mean, definitely Invincible, which is something we've talked about a lot. You know, it was a huge influence on Kyle as we were sort of bringing the book together, and we got a great pull quote from Robert Kirkman, which really made our days. So, like, absolutely Invincible, Spider-Man. I think, like, I was a big Ultimate Spider-Man fan for that whole run, and I think, you know, there's a degree to which like everyone, I think, inventing a new superhero since the year 2000 is drawing from some of what Bendis did in that sort of at the start of that run all the way through to issue 200 or however many of those he wrote. What else is there? There's some science fiction-y sort of stuff in there. And I don't know that it's very much superhero science fiction stuff. Like there's no hard quantum mechanics or anything like that. But I think it's certainly more science fiction-y than like Power Rangers is. So I think if people like that sort of stuff, you know, there's some of that in there. Carl, can you think of anything else that has been a really big influence on you?
Well, yeah, the Kamen Rider, there's some Kamen Rider kind of
influence. Oh, yeah, there is some Kamen Rider. That's definitely true. That's, yeah.
Yeah, no, I would say, well, there's some crime fiction influence as well, because Nathan is, he's a huge fan of Raymond Chandler, and that's like his dream to be the next Raymond Chandler. And he has kind of a romantic idea of what Los Angeles is and being a crime novelist in LA, et cetera. So there's some James Ellroy, there's some Raymond Chandler kind of influence in kind of some, there's influence in the stories within the stories, but then there's also like, there's some plotting influence, I guess.
Kyle, there was one other thing that I saw you name drop somewhere else. Was it 100 Bullets in terms of, was that not it? Maybe it was something else. In terms of like the first couple of issues definitely are all quite self-contained. You know, there's ongoing threads and stuff, but they're very much individual stories.
Yeah, it would probably have been 100 Bullets then, yeah. Like just the idea that we're not writing for trade. Like we're kind of writing for both. Like my intention, like I think issue one reads, I mean, well, you read it, Jace, but issue one and issue two are really designed as their own story, but they absolutely do build on each other at the same time. And so I'm trying to do that across the board here. So I think that we as an industry and and especially as a genre, like within the superhero genre, we've very much kind of taught people to wait for trade.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, if for some reason somebody missed out on the first issue, you could pick up the second issue and hit the ground running. And that used to be the case, you know, when, you know, back in the day, there was always the recap kind of thing. You do that, you know, enough of that in issue two. But that said, listeners, don't sleep on issue one. You definitely want to get your hands on it. It's out February 10th. So let your retailer know right now you want a copy, because I'm telling you, this book's going to fly off the shelves, and if you don't tell them now, you run the risk of missing it, and you don't want to miss out. Trust me, it's going to be amazing. So as we're winding up here, guys, I really want to thank you for your time. Anything else that you want readers and listeners to know about it? And why don't you go ahead and let them know where they can find you online? We'll start with you, Michael.
Sure. Just thank you for your time. This has been great. I hope people like it. It's very weird. You know, we've been sitting on this for more than a year in different forms, like from the very start all the way through to now. And the idea that we are now, I think, 2 or 3 weeks away from people actually having it in their hands is very unusual. And that's the part that I'm not sure how we're going to cope with, but we'll be fine. I am on Twitter at @M_Bussutil. That's BUSUTTIL. Or you can just go to @RadiantBLK, and I'm sure it'll be linked from there.
Great. And you, Kyle?
I don't remember what your first question was.
Anything else that you want listeners or readers to know?
No, just that we're in it for the long haul. And we want to be making this book as long as we are we're going to be making this book for as long as we're allowed to be making this book.
Great.
But that all comes down to reader support, and then on top of that, I think I would add, like, we really want to use our back matter, our letters column, as a way to celebrate awesome things and awesome people, other creators, other projects, backstories for Radiant Black, etc. So that would be the other thing that we haven't really talked about yet, but keep an eye on the letters column. And the last thing I would say is I have a newsletter that I just started. There's a link probably through my Twitter, which is Kyle D. Higgins. Otherwise, you can go to radiant.black/newsletter to sign up. And it's my company, Black Market Narrative. And so the newsletter is called Kyle Higgins Black Market News. That'll be something that I'm going to be utilizing more and more, cause I have a number of kind of big stuff happening this year, hopefully, knock on wood. Significantly for Radiant Black, it's going to be where we announce certain things, like maybe limited exclusive items. Maybe there's a cover or something that we announce there that is in a limited quantity. So we definitely recommend signing up for the newsletter if you want to kind of stay up to date on all sorts of other cool things.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll put links to the newsletter, the website and both Kyle and Michael's social media in the show notes, so you can go there and find it. And I'm glad you mentioned the newsletter the letters column, because the idea of building a Ready and Black community, there's going to be a lot to talk about with this book. And so I like that idea of all of us Radiant Black fans getting together and having a place to kind of celebrate each other and not just celebrate Radiant Black cool things, but just all the stuff that we love, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, again, thank you both for your time. It's been a blast to talk some Radiant Black. Listeners, to you, thanks for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.